Today is Sunday, November 29th, 2020. This is a Part 9 Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with Richard Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Richard. How are you today?
Doing fine, thank you.
Great. May we have your permission to record this interview over the telephone?
Yes.
Thank you. We left off in Part 8, where you had taken early retirement at Olympic and moved to Hawaii in 1999, early 2000. Can you pick that thread up?
Sure. Yeah, we moved over to some property that we had bought, I think in 93 or 94, and took that early retirement because the work we were doing over here was so physical, and I was 50 already, and I didn't want to, there was no way I was going to get done what I needed to get done if I retired at 62 or 63. So, my wife and I, came over, and we already had the start of a structure done, and we had a little nursery full of coffee plants that we had grown from seed, and came over and then just got into it, got into house building, got into learning about solar power because we're totally off the grid.
Wow.
Got into learning about catchment water and roof angles and the type of roof you need to catch the most amount of water and farming. We started planting under the canopy of the native ohia trees.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, bird friendly, but, we're learning every step of the way. And we, started a little addition to our 32 by 32 structure and just, started making the place, what it is today, you know, fruit trees, avocado trees. Our whole goal was sustainability.
Wow, cool.
We didn't have grandiose plans of becoming coffee farmers, but we both love coffee, and so it was something we said, well, yeah, let's, you know, get up in the morning and have a cup of our own coffee.
Wow.
So make a salad out of our garden bread or garden beds in the afternoon. Smoke our own weed at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, just... sustainability.
Right. Make your own electricity.
Make your own electricity. Make your own pretty much everything. Grow a lot of your own food, which is huge when you live in Hawaii.
Wow.
People ask, isn't Hawaii just really expensive? And I just say, you know, it depends on how you live.
Interesting.
I can live over here cheaper than I can live in the mainland.
Wow.
So, yeah, we succeeded in basically not having any bills, you know.
Cool.
And then along the way, you know, we just kept expanding and kept doing what we do. We had our own little coffee label called Canopy Coffee.
Cool.
Canopy Coffee Company. I would spread the word on the shade grown coffee and saving the native habitat. There wasn't, it's monocrop over here. The state of Hawaii says that you should be able to gross $15,000 an acre. And it doesn't matter what you grow. It could be lettuce, it could be coffee, it could be papayas, but they really pushed monocrops, you know, mow everything down, throw in on 5 acres. If I would have done it the way they suggested, I could have had 7,000 coffee plants, about 1,200 an acre. But we took the 5 acres, 5.5 acres, and probably had, at our peak, probably had about 1,200 coffee trees, which would be 1 acre's worth, you know, if you were mono.
Right.
It, you know, we added the other stuff, the avocados, the lemons, the tangelos, the grapefruits, the soursop, the guava, the, you pretty much name it, we're growing it.
Wow.
And then big garden beds and such. So we were rolling pretty good, and after about 2 years, I got a call from one of the guys that works in the regional office over in Seattle. We had our own satellite regional office in Honolulu, but they were supervised by the Seattle office.
Okay.
And asked me if I could clear up some projects they were doing at Volcano. Volcano had been getting a lot of repair rehab money and cyclic money and really weren't getting the jobs done. And I said, yeah, well, let me go check it out. You know, I'm pretty good here. I've been retired for 2 years, maybe 2.5 years. And went up there and looked at what kind of jobs they were wanting to get done. And
what did they have going? So Richard, I have a couple of questions. First one was, what did you think about that? And the second one was, you know, what kind of deal were they dealing with there? Because you seem to have landed in a number of parks to clean up messes. And
yeah, that might be too strong a word, clean up messes. It was more to get some things going that they didn't have the staff to do.
Okay.
Didn't really want to do.
Fair enough.
Chu was fine with it.
Cool.
I mean, when we flew over here, I remember sitting on the airplane. She just starts going, oh, man, retired. We're retired. We're moving to Hawaii. And I said, Chewy, I'm retired. you're unemployed, you know. And what? So, which is good. She's 10 years younger than I, so she was 40 at the time or
okay.
something, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so she was back working at a restaurant in town, and she was fine. She was fine with it.
Cool.
So I went up to Volcano and talked to the chief of maintenance, had an interview with him, said, what are you looking at? You know, what kind of jobs? And a lot of them turned out to be just a lot of fun. Almost all of them was backcountry. And a couple of things around the rim, crater rim. And I said, how long are you thinking? He says, probably 2 years to get them all cleaned up. I said, yeah, I can give you 2 years. And this was 2002, I think, summertime. And I ended up being there 11 years.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. It was fun.
Huh. Can you describe the park? Because, I mean, I certainly haven't a clue. I've heard of volcanoes, but I know nothing about the lay of the land, how big, and what's going on there. I didn't even know they had any backcountry there.
Oh, yeah. They got a coastal strip that's, if you were to hike it, it'd take you 3 days.
Wow.
But it's not majestic like you would say the canyon is, or Yosemite. But it's every bit as impressive. It's very raw. the lava flows. The ongoing eruptions. It really is just a spectacular place. And it's probably, we just added a couple hundred thousand acres about 8 or 9 years ago.
Hmm.
But I guess it's probably over 500,000 now. I'd have to kind of look at that.
Cool.
And, you know, it goes from the top of Mauna Loa, which is 13,400 feet, down to sea level.
Wow.
And so it's got just something like 11 of the 13 zones, climate zones. It was raw. It's a lot of fresh lava with no growth, but then you go a mile away and all of a sudden there's giant tree ferns and ohia trees and pit craters everywhere. And
what's a pit crater?
Pit crater is like crater eaten out by lava, or an eruption collapses.
Wow.
The ground around it.
Hmm. Okay.
It's just an unbelievable place.
Hmm.
And the first few jobs I had were doing some ADA work. Building little ADA trails and stuff along the rim. And I was tasked to when there was lava flowing in the park, which was quite often, then you had the superintendent wanted access to the public to the lava to a certain extent, but you know, he wanted them to be able to get up close and personal with lava.
Wow.
And so my earlier job lasted about 3 or 4 months, was going out early in the morning and seeing how the lava had changed the trail that we had up to it the night before.
Okay.
And that was spectacular. Those are some of the best times I've had in the Park Service out there before sunrise.
Oh, wow.
Walking around lava right on the ocean, you know, sitting right on the ocean, right where it's pouring into the ocean.
Wow.
And putting cones out to provide safe access. And I did that for a few months, and then they hired an eruption crew, and I had started hiring my crew. Good crew. Couple of Native Hawaiian guys, and the work that we were going to be doing was fairly technical. So I brought in five people from the mainland.
Who?
Tim Onsott, who's right now is at Saguaro. Shelley Lane, who was at Mount Rainier, and was actually passed the bar and was a lawyer. And,
wow.
Did that for a couple of 3 years and then just said, you know, fuck it. I want to get back to trails. I want to be down in the dirt. She was really handy to have too.
Cool.
I mean, really bad. And a few other guys, Kip Ballard, guy out of Zion. And, so we got to work.
Cool.
And the job basically expanded through the years from Volcano to much of the South Pacific.
And, oh, my gosh.
So I was traveling quite a bit, going to Samoa, Molokai, Haleakala, Honolulu, and just taking up, you know, projects throughout the islands, throughout the Pacific.
Wow, cool.
And that's why I left. That's why I stayed 11 years. I mean, it was just dandy. I learned a lot about Hawaiian culture. I worked with, like I said, I had a couple of Native Hawaiians. Resource management. We were doing a lot of stuff with resource management, and they were mostly Hawaiian locals, and met some great people. Did and like I say, the culture was something else. I mean, it's just, you know, 100 years ago, when we got done killing the First Nation people over in America, we set sail and put our friggin' took over Hawaii.
Right.
And it was recent. I mean, it was like 100 years ago. You know? So, just an all around incredible experience.
Tell me some of the neat projects that you worked on, besides putting cones out. I guess if the cones were too close, they would melt, and you'd know they were too close.
Yeah, or it had changed, and the lava had, you know, had done fingers around it. And what was good the day before might not be good that morning.
Wow. Know? Huh.
And, yeah, that was fun. Oh, what did we do? We put in five composting toilets at five different camping areas, or six of them. And they were, we had to build the structure, compost, assemble all of that. They were good-sized structures.
Hmm. So these are like, not quite two-story, but maybe a story and a half. You have to walk up.
Story, yep.
With a chambers, bins down below to take the solid waste and then compost it, and then you have to scoop that stuff out of there and then go spread it out somewhere for it to go back into the land, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. And then you had to have the building up on top of everything that you could actually sit in and do your business.
Right.
And those were good jobs, because each one of them would took us, I would say, on the average of about 3 weeks to a month.
Okay.
And we were camped out on the coastal strip.
Wow.
Place called Keho, beautiful, big sea turtles, whales.
Wow.
The Hawaiian guys throwing nets and, I mean, fresh fish every night for dinner. Lobster nets, we would put our lobster nets out at night, and have lobster the next day.
Wow.
And the camps were all helicoptered in, so.
Okay. I was going to ask you, did they have any mule, any stock at all, or was it all by air?
They did have stock. I wasn't in charge of it. I was more doing special projects.
Okay.
And they did some packing for us, but most of the stuff was just, you know, too bulky, lots of food. I mean, we would fly in 400 or 500 pounds of ice in coolers, and then all our camp gear and all our food and all our tools. And some days when we were gearing up, it might be 9 or 10 sorties to get all our stuff in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And those were fun. We put in new catchment water tanks all through the backcountry, took out the old ones and put in food-grade ones. We did...
those water tanks, are they... sorry, I'm jumping in there on that one. Are they for... like people who are walking through the park, or were they for to promote water for wildlife?
They were for hikers.
Okay.
Because there's no streams, there's no running water, and it's almost impossible, especially along the coast, to carry enough water to make it.
Okay.
And so we had at the three coastal camps that are each spread out about, you know, a pool of, they're spread out about 4 or 5 miles apart.
Okay.
We had catchment tanks there. Then we also had tanks at place called Red Hill, which is at 10,000 feet.
Wow.
And then the summit at Mauna Loa. And we also did composters at those two places. And they were at working at 13 plus thousand was hard work.
I bet. living at sea level, you had no hematocrit in your blood to carry oxygen. That would have been tough. Oh, my gosh.
Right. So, that was good. And then an old canyon friend of mine, Tom Workman, had just accepted the superintendent's job at Kalapapa.
Where's that?
That's on the island of Molokai. That's where the people with Hansen's disease were sent. Back in the day.
Okay.
Leprosy. Yeah. Hansen disease. And he was having some problems with some rock fall and stuff. And they ran mules in there. It's the steepest sea cliffs in the world.
Wow.
They rise up a little over 2,000 feet just, you know, vertical.
Wow.
And they had the only way you could go into the colony, because there was still, when I started working there, I think there was like 70 patients still living there.
Hmm.
And they had the only way the public could go in there was if they were on a tour, a day tour. Couldn't spend the night, but just a day tour.
Okay.
And those were run by a mule string up topside. And they had probably 35, 40 mules. And it was owned by a guy by the name of Buzzy Sproat, who was just a friggin' legend. I mean, he was something else. But anyway, Workman calls me over. He says, why don't you come on over to Molokai and give me some advice? And I said, oh, sure. I went over there, and it was an unbelievable trail. Hadn't been worked. It was built back in the 1800s as a way for people to supply the colony.
Wow.
And it hadn't been worked on much since. So I went down and checked out the one of his problem areas, which was right on the ocean. And so God, and then I hiked the trail, and I came back. I said, "Workman, I said this is the least of your problems. This spot we're looking at, you know, you're gonna lose this whole friggin' trail."
Wow.
He goes, "Yeah, I know, I know. You know, you got it." So anyway, we set some stuff up. I filled out a bunch of stuff. We started getting funding to. And it was the first dedicated funding to work that trail in quite some time, and we did a hell of a job over there on that.
Cool. So this is like rebuilding retaining walls and stabilizing upslope debris kind of stuff.
Yep, and putting in drainage.
Ah.
Putting in. Doing some riprap. I got a hold of some reports and some photographs and such of how it was built by the patients. And they used a lot of it round rock riprap. Stuff from the ocean right along the, you know, just hauling rock out of the, from the ocean down there and bringing it up. And so we, I told Tom, I said, we should try to put a lot of this back together like it was.
What did they use to hold the riprap? I mean, round rock, without something to hold it, it just falls all apart. Did they use wood for that?
No, I mean, it was done like regular riprap. You start at the friggin' top and just tie everything together. I mean, a lot of digging, a lot of everything, and it worked. There was still
wow.
a lot of remaining riprap that was, you know, that used to be maybe 100 foot, and there might have been 10 or 15 foot left in different sections of that 100 foot.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so that opened up some historical rehab money.
Cool.
And what became a day trip over there, or a two-day trip to go over and see workmen and stuff, turned into 8 years of going over there 2 to 3 months a year. I would take my crew. I would bring people in from the mainland, guys I'd worked with in the past, guys from Yosemite that knew rock, and, Don Charlo, who's from, he was at the Canyon for quite some time, and also Mount Rainier. A couple of Olympic guys, and we would hit it hard. We were usually over there mostly January, February, March, with a big solid crew, could be up to 8 or 9 guys, and just taking it one switchback at a time. I mean, that's all you could do. There was 27 switchbacks.
Whoa.
on this trail. And they were steep switchbacks, and that's 27 over about 2 miles, 2.5 miles.
Wow.
Yeah, 27 switchbacks, and then you got down by the coast. It was another 3/4 of a mile to get to the colony, and so it was an incredible job. You know, brought in a lot of good people on that one,
and they must have loved it, because in the winter, you know, places like Yellowstone or Yosemite or you know, a lot of places are kind of shut down then, and so this would keep them working and get a chance to go to Hawaii in the winter. Not bad.
Yeah, exactly. And my crew enjoyed the change also, and so it was great.
Cool.
We worked through. Workman left, and a guy by the name of Steve Procroft became the superintendent. We picked up right where we left off with Workman, with Steve. He loved us. He saw what we were doing, and it was an amazing place to work. People asked me about Kalapapa, and I said, it's like being in the Grand Canyon and Arlington National Cemetery at the same time.
Wow.
Because it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. And on the other hand, it is just emotionally just an incredible place when you learn about the history and what we did to the people, and Father Damien and Sister Maria Cope, both saints in the Catholic Church now, both, and just the whole history of it. And the Park Service has done a really good job of preserving it.
Cool.
Damien's church, of course, they did a major upgrade after he was beatified, or I guess that's what you call it, declared a saint,
right.
And put some money in there, and it's just spectacular. I was telling Workman one time, we were hiking the trail, and I said, and I was thinking about doing a book for the 100th anniversary of the Park Service. It was going to be 100 best places to get high in the national parks. It'd be a coffee table book.
Uh-huh.
And getting high can mean anything, you know.
Yeah.
It can mean anything. I was on natural highs, you know, just most of the time. And he looked at me and he said, "By God, we better not be in that book." And I said, "Fuck, Workman, you guys are in it 9 times. You know, it was just such a spectacular place.
Wow.
I mean, absolutely one of the top places that I've ever worked. And it's, you know, the park itself is maybe a couple thousand acres now. It was jointly run by the state and the feds. The state ran the cafeteria and the hospital for the patients down there. They had a hospital. They had cafeteria the patients could eat at. And they did the maintenance on that. They did the maintenance on the patients' houses. And the Park Service took over basically the churches, the group meeting areas, and the interpretation of the place. And then whenever a patient died, then that house came back to the feds, and then they would do do rehabs on the houses also, and trying to match up the colors, trying to, you know, real big historic preservation area.
Cool.
And yeah, it was unbelievable. So many wildlife sightings down there. I set out on the point, probably one of the most spectacular whale shows I've ever seen. I saw one whale give birth there.
Wow.
First breath. Real lucky to see first breath. Not a lot of people have. Monk seals hauling out on the beaches. It's a remote spot. I mean, that's why they put it there, so that they could put these people down there with Hansen's disease and make sure they couldn't get out.
Yeah.
And, it was, it was great.
Very cool.
And so that kept me going also, is that every year I would go over there, and, you know, I've just a lot of things, man, a lot of different places. American Samoa, I went over there. They wanted to redo a trail that was used from one side of the island to get into Pongo Pongo, which is their big city. Big being, I don't know, 15,000 people maybe.
Wow.
And they had had a trail that before they put a road in over the pass and into a little town called Vientia. And I got up there and I just had a Samoan guy out in front of me with swinging a machete, and spent 2 days looking at it, and went in and saw the superintendent. I said, what do you expect us to do with this? We got some money and we just want to try to get it cut out and nothing elaborate, but it was insane. Just knife ridge kind of stuff and going down through little canyons and back. The total length was probably only 7 miles, but, that was also a fun one.
Just sounds so amazing. It's the sort of stuff, you know, when I think of knife ridges, the closest thing I can think of in Grand Canyon is like Ooh-Ah Point, you know. You come out to the ridge, you look over the edge, you get back on big fat ground. And I just like, holy cow, how do you work on something like that? You try to cut the ridge down to a kind of 4 foot wide width? How do you do that?
Yeah, you try to cut back into it where you can. But, you know, I don't know how long it had been, really, before anybody had worked it.
Huh.
And then there was some just real steep kind of stuff where we hung some ladders and, that we would make. And it, you know, got it. We ended up hiring a crew over there that I went back and checked on maybe 2 or 3 times during a couple of year period when they were building it.
Okay.
And yeah, so, you know, the whole, like I say, the whole job just morphed into something more than it was going to be. And there was always stuff at Volcano to do. The visitation there was just absolutely insane. It was the largest single gate. we only had one gate. But more money came in through that gate than any other gate.
Wow.
Yellowstone's got 5 or 6 gates. Olympic's got 9 or 10 gates. Every river valley, the Elwha is sold up. Going to Hurricane Ridge, you got a gate there. But pay your fees. But this Wonder Volcano was the only one in the park. And so they kept generating user fee dollars, and they kept putting new projects out there, and a lot of them were starting from scratch, ADA trails that, might take you 4 or 5 months to complete, a new campground with ADA tent sites, and also I think we put in 9 sites, and then the whole trail around it had to be ADA. Just a great way to cap a career, I guess.
Yeah. All kinds of stuff all over the place, and not kind of Pacific Northwest forests or desert canyons, but ocean landscapes.
Ocean landscapes, and then, like you say, raw landscapes in the park, where there's just lava flows and nothing growing. I would describe volcano as raw, but probably one of the most alive places that I've been. There was a spirit up there. There was just energy when Pele, Madame Pele, she's the goddess of fire, goddess of volcano, when she was there, it was just alive.
Wow.
I used to always love hiking full moons. I did a lot of it at the Grand Canyon, and I got back into it at Volcano. Go down in that crater at night, steam coming from everywhere, because the lava was just, 100 feet below your feet, and all these cracks and steam coming out, and auras everywhere, and just very alive. And then when the eruption stopped, I went back up. Eruption stopped about 2.5 years ago. It had been going on for 25 years.
Wow.
I went back up to Haole Mau Mau, which is House of Pele, and we had done a bunch of work up there along the deal, building a really nice trail out to a viewpoint, and then a beautiful overlook, and that got sucked in. Probably 2 or 3 years after we built it, when Haole Mau Mau itself started erupting.
Wow.
And after it stopped, the crater was 5 times bigger than when it started, 5 to 10 times bigger than when it started. I mean, just a unbelievable landscape change. And I was with a friend that worked up there, and I said, "Man, this place feels empty." And he said, "Pele's gone." Pele's gone, and that's what it was. I mean, all this energy that she had pumped out through the years, and all the changes that could happen on a daily, weekly basis, all of that kind of energy was gone. Still a beautiful place to go up to. Took Chew up there a few weeks ago. It's been a few months now. She used to come up all the time when I was working up there too. I had my office they put into a residential building, so I could not have to commute, and that worked out pretty sweet.
Cool.
Yeah. I don't know what else to say.
It sounds kind of amazing. Like you say, it's an amazing way to wrap up a career.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
It really was. It was unbelievable. And now, here we are.
Yeah. When we started this interview, you were talking about the Yellow Brick Road and how amazing it was that things kind of opened up for you. And I sort of think of this as another one of those as well. Just another 11 years in amazing country doing amazing things.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it worked out really well for me. You know, when I went back to work, I went back as a, what do they call it? Civil service annuitant. But the time that I put in, when I got done, they recalculated my retirement, and it basically doubled.
Wow.
For better, because all the time that I went back to work counted towards retirement. So instead of 50 with 20 years in when I retired, I had 31 years in, and I was 64 or something, 65.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good deal for me, and I think we got some good stuff done for the park, so that was kind of a win-win.
Yeah, good deal for the public.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool.
And now, I don't know what that yellow brick road was that when my wife went thud, but we're on it, and we're making it work, so just different, you know?
Yeah, just. Yeah.
So you want to finish off next week?
Yeah. Let's do that.
I wouldn't mind, since we're getting into this detail, kind of detail, I'm going to have a transcript. I wouldn't mind talking about my wife's injury in our life now, and maybe read a couple of things into the record.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome. Okay. Let's do that. I'll wrap this up and hold the line for a minute.
All right.
So today is Sunday. It's November 29th, 2020. This will conclude part 9, Oral History with Richard Hansen. My name is Tom Martin. Richard, thank you so very much.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for being so professional.